5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Tonight we have Steve Barish. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, we're just a little late getting around here. Turning on, I didn't have the lights on yet. There they come. We're a little late getting on, but I apologize for that. We couldn't get Ustream fired up. Ustream is now fired up.
And now
there's
fired up. Ustream is now fired up.
Now I got to get rid of the echo. How do you like that?
Yeah, I hear it.
Got the show, baby.
Yeah.
So anyhow, now we'll get the recording going so everybody can archive this puppy. Yeah, you know, as I explained to Don, you know, it's about a city block from where that phone is when he called down to my studio. It's, this house is that big. I mean, it's long.
Yeah.
It's about, I don't know, 500-600 feet down there to the other end, and I had to go through several rooms to get down here. So as a result, we got started a little bit late. So we're working on the book, and I wanted to talk for a few minutes about one of my favorite guys here. In fact, I'm going to read something out of the book. Would you like to hear about something?
Absolutely.
You know, some of these, and my sidekick Bella is, oh, hello, Stella. Ooh, nice kiss. Give me a kiss. You know who Max Planck was?
No.
They called the Planck constant, the Planck length. He was the guy that started, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't understand how these or somebody like him, how these projectors work.
Really?
Yeah. He's the guy, in my book, I cover from, let me see here. I cover from about, about 555 B.C., which was Thales, all the way, many, many, many different guys that made everything. And that was with, Ptolemy, Pythagoras, Isaac Newton, all those guys, you know what I mean?
Wow.
All the way up. And it's interesting, they came, Thales, there wasn't anybody around there. After Thales, Aristotle came along, and he was pretty cool. Not Aristotle, but Archimedes came along.
Okay.
And Archimedes was interesting because he was on one corner of Greece, and they were trying to, the southern and northern Greece used to, what they would call the Carthaginians, were fighting all the time, right? So, so he made all these, Archimedes did. He made these weapons that would fire rocks out off the top of their city, way out, half a mile out, and bust a ship right in half.
Wow.
And then he made a thing where, if the ship got too close, he had a crane that came down. They'd fire a hook out there, would hook the damn ship, and turn the ship over.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it could shoot out 1,000 feet. So when, I forget what his name was, the other Grecian guy that came in, his oppressor, they had tremendous respect for Archimedes. And also, he invented, irrigation. He made a corkscrew inside of imagine a corkscrew inside of a tube, and then the water would be at the bottom of the tube, and it would corkscrew through the tube to the top of the tube, and that was the first irrigation.
Yeah.
Well, after him, there wasn't anybody really smart. I mean, there's a long time there where there's no real smart people around. You know, they didn't really start showing up until the 16th century with Isaac Newton and that bunch of guys. So all the way up until the mid-1800s, they worked out classical physics. It's real interesting to see how these guys incarnated, you know. And the guys that started coming in the 16th century, which was the 1500s, up until the 1900s, most of them have a very strong ecclesiastical background. Their dads were preachers, or some of them were born broke, some of them were born with money, with silver spoons. Well, you get up to that, all that ended. In my book, I wrote about Thomas Edison, who used to electrocute people, but animals, because he had the electric chair. So I don't really like Thomas Edison. And then Nikola Tesla, He died in room 3227 in the New Yorker Hotel, which was on the, I forget, it was the 32nd floor. I used to stay in his room.
Really?
Yeah, in Tesla's room. It looked out over the, it was a suite. It was a two-room suite with a big shower that looked, great big glass windows, and it looked out over the, it looked out over the Statue of Liberty.
Wow.
I used to take a shower. It was real interesting. And of course, they remodeled it now, and that suite doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of crappy because I went back there. I wanted to call it Tesla's old suite, and they didn't have it available.
Huh.
But after Tesla, and, well, during Tesla's time, actually, physics made a giant leap into quantum mechanics, quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, before they were talking about, taking a box and cutting a hole in it,
mm-hmm.
and then shooting a light into it and watching the inside of the box light up, you know, even though there's a little beam going in there.
Right.
But at the same time, there was a bright spot on the opposite wall of the box from the hole, but then there was reflection in there, and that, to physicists, was a lot. So they realized that there was some kind of a wave motion going on.
Mm-hmm.
But when Max Planck came along, he took all that iffy stuff from classic physics and open up what's called quantum physics. Okay?
Mm.
And I'm going to explain that here in a minute. I'm going to read a little bit. It's going to take a few minutes, but I think it's I think I'll read this. So he's the first guy. Now, him and Einstein used to hang out together, and they used to play music together. Einstein was on the violin, and Max Planck was the guy that got Einstein going. You know,
mm.
he was a little bit older than Einstein, and they all lived in Berlin at the time.
Right.
So here's how I wrote this. My feelings are that Max Planck really kicked the quantum world, supported by his simple but straightforward equations, into high gear. Carl Ernest Ludwig Marx Planck was born April 23rd, just out of Aries, in Kiel, Germany in 1858. His father was a professor of civil law. His paternal grandfather, great-grandfather and grandfather were both theology professors in Göttingen. Oh, by the way, listeners out there, we are on the air on Ustream. We're born in Göttingen. His father was a law professor in Kiel. Actually, it's called Kyle, and his paternal uncle was a judge. He was the sixth child in the family, so two of his siblings were from his father's first marriage. I remember Benjamin Franklin came from 13, a family of 13.
Yeah, he came from a big family, yeah.
Yeah, big. He was like number eight, I think he was. It's in the book. And in March of 1887, he married Mary Merck. And I wonder if that had to do anything Merck. I bet it's probably Merck Pharmacy, you know, today, because I'm going to cover that in another chapter. And they both moved into a little apartment in Kiel. They had four children. Now, check this out. They had Carl, a pair of twins, Emma, Greta, and Erwin. Okay? Having been appointed in 1885 by the University of Kiel as a theoretical professor of physics, the Planck family moved into a villa in Berlin-Grunewald at Wagenheimstrasse 21. Wagenheimstrasse 21. Or actually, it's Wagenheim. Several other professors of the Berlin University lived nearby. Among them was Adolf van Harnack, who became a close friend of Planck. Soon, with Harnack over there, he was a professor of philosophy. And now, a lot of these guys I find were friends of philosophers. In the case of Einstein, him and Bertrand Russell were very close.
Mm-hmm.
In case you haven't heard of him, Bertrand Russell was quite famous.
Yes.
Okay, soon the home became a cultural center. And numerous well-known scientists such as Albert Einstein, Otto Hahn, and Leis Meitner were frequent visitors. So they started hanging out, just goofing off. The tradition is jointly performing music had already been established in his home. Then he became a close friend of Hermann van Helmholtz, an earlier property in the healing qualities of music and physics. Now, Helmholtz was real interesting. I'm not going to write a lot about him, but he was one of the first guys that did sound healing. He believed that sound
really
healed the body. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
This is the turn of the century now. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's 1887. Ernest von Helmholtz. So we're going to cover that more. You know, those sound You know that sound generator, the hydrogen generator?
Yes.
You don't have one of those yet, do you?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you have one. Good. How do you like it?
I love it. I play it all the time.
Yeah, that was Jeffrey Balmer's work on the hydrogen atom. But Helmholtz was the guy that started Balmer off, so
mm-hmm.
you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was it was here that Planck was playing the piano, Albert Einstein playing the violin, began their lifelong careers together. They also often did concerts, the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool in Berlin. When I played a concert, I got to play in the very hall that Einstein played in.
Wow.
Myself as a solo musician back in 91. After several happy years, now it's all happy now, see, the Planck family was struck by a series of disasters.
Mm-hmm.
In July 1909, Marie Planck died of tuberculosis, his wife. In 1911, Planck married his second wife, Marga von Hassen, and in December they had a third son, Hermann, was born.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go into the war years. During the First World War, Planck's second son, Erwin, was taken prisoner by the French in 1914, while his oldest son, Karl, was killed in action in Verdun.
Mom.
So that's kind of sad.
Yes.
Daughter dies in 1917 while giving birth to her child, her first child, the twins now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then her sister, Emma, the other twin, died the same way 2 years later after marrying the other twin's ex-husband, widower, and both of them had died giving birth to kids. So Planck has lost three of his kids, his twins and one of his sons, and the other one's been in prison. Well, you're a high-strung physicist. This is kind of like heavy on you, you know?
Yeah.
Both grandmothers survived and were named after their mothers in January 1945. Now, here we go. Now, here's where it gets heavier. In January 1945, Erwin, his oldest son, was sentenced to death by the Nazi Volksgreifhof. Now, for his participation in a failed attempt to assassinate Hitler in 1944.
Mm.
Now, here's where it's real interesting. The Volksgerichtshof, okay, which is called the Nazis People Court,
mm-hmm.
established by Adolf Hitler that killed his son, was established to persecute people who went against his false flag operations, including the fake accusations of the persons involved in the Reichstag fire.
Mm-hmm.
In today's times, a similar court was set up by ex-President Bush to persecute terrorists after the false flag operation and destruction of the World Trade Center.
Wow.
See, I mean, it's just scary, what's coming up in this book.
Yeah.
Erwin was hanged on 23rd of July, 1945. Okay, now here's where he goes into physics now. Here we go. That's just background, okay? Just to show you what the guy's going through. Okay, in physics, black body radiation, black body is an object at the source of all electromagnetic radiation that falls onto it. No electromagnetic radiation is passed through it, and none is reflected. Because no light, visible electromagnetic radiation, remember, light is considered by a physicist, electromagnetic radiation, still classic physics now,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
reflected or transmitted. In other words, if it's a black piece of metal, it traps the light, the photons.
Okay.
To illustrate this, a container with a small hole into it, which radiation shines in, is trapped. That would be like what we were talking about in the beginning here.
Okay.
As light enters the container through the hole part is reflected and part is absorbed in each reflection of the interior walls. After many reflections, incident energy is absorbed. So in other words, you're shining a light into a box and it makes the box sort of glow and you still see the spot where it goes through and hits the back of the thing.
Right.
That's where physics was when he stepped in. So this is where he started. The intensity of black body radiation is greatly affected by temperature. That intensity increases with the increase in temperature. When the wavelength is short, the intensity of radiation is small. You know, short wavelength
mm-hmm.
would be like infrared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then like the red lasers. As the wavelength increases, the intensity increases too, and after reaching a maximum value, and then decreases as the wavelength increases. In other words, in this condition, light peaks out. It has a high intensity and it has a low intensity as you increase the frequency. So it's not just a linear change. There's a big peak here, and that really stumped all the physicists. Why? As it decreases in wavelength and increases, why is it doing this, you know? That was what the big problem was with black body radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a saturated Saturation value within the intensity of light peaks out and then falls off. This created a quarry in classical physics. See, now classical physics can't explain it. The peaking effect fell under the problems of entropy in physics. Now, entropy is the dissemination of energy in strange ways. Energy gets used up in physics, in classic physics, in ways that's not really explainable. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, let me get back here. To solve this problem, Planck assumed that radiation is emitted or received in energy packets called quanta, with the quanta energy equal E. So here he is. Now he's saying, okay, it's not a steady. Light is not a steady beam. Even laser, it's packets. It's little bursts. It's pulsing. You follow me? And when I built my first time machine, and I was inside of it looking out at some car with headlights coming out.
Yeah.
There were little the beam coming off the headlights, the car was frozen. It was going up a hill, but because I was accelerating into the future, the car appeared to be still. I wish I had taken a picture of this. I wasn't a photographer that much in those days. So when I looked out at the headlights of the car, I saw these quantum spots.
Mm-hmm.
Before I got, I was a background in classic physics too. I wasn't a quantum mechanic guy. I am now, or becoming one. But I mean, I was classic physics, and I was into radiation, which is another chapter in the book, The Atomic Age, which we don't care about here now. For this, so I saw these things come out, and I understand it now. It was these packets, but he called them quanta packets. So this is where the word quantum came from. He coined it. It's a buzzword today, and so his formula ended up with, to solve this problem, Planck assumed that the radiation is emitted or received in energy packets called quanta, with the quanta energy E equal to the product of Planck constant H at the wave frequency. So he has a formula called E equals 8HF. E equals the wave frequency, you know, it's red laser, green laser.
Right.
Times H. Now, although this theory was not accepted immediately, it came into use in Einstein's prediction of photoelectric effect, but which he got a Nobel Peace Prize for.
Mm-hmm.
Why are electrons emitted from metals when you shine a light on them? In the 1905, and also in Niels Bohr's successful model of electronic structure of atoms in 1913. And when you start, J.J. Thomson had discovered the electron just about 20, 30 years before that, and built the first cathode ray tube, which became a picture tube.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at that, but they're not understanding the whole. At that time, they thought there was electrons were just piled up in the nucleus of the atom. There was just a bunch of them in there. The proton really hadn't been understood yet. That was being discovered right about now.
Okay.
See what I mean? Isn't that cool? I mean, think about science in those days. This guy has discovered an electron. He's made a cathode ray tube. He puts different gases in it. Another guy has done the same thing with shooting that, different gases, shooting it into metal, and he gets a spectrum, off a neon light. Tesla's doing this stuff. But nobody really knows what the atom is, see?
Yep.
So anyway, this theory was not accepted immediately. It came into use in Einstein's production of photoelectric effect, blah, blah, blah. In the 1920s, Planck's followers showed how to express all new concepts consistently with the use of the idea of a packet of light. This laid the foundation for the concept, this laid the foundation to complete the quantum theory. Now, this is not edited, so there's mistakes. Now, unfortunately, Boltzmann, remember we talked about Boltzmann, it was his buddy in the very beginning. He was an old classic guy, and he's the guy that couldn't understand quanta. It didn't work for him. So Boltzmann, his old early buddy, his first teacher, could not comprehend this new discovery, and he was depressed by lack of acceptance of his work.
Mm-hmm.
Teacher now goes out and committed suicide while on holiday in the Adriatic coast.
Wow!
Think that out. His favorite guy, his teacher, the guy that got him going, commits suicide because he can't accept his theory, and everybody else does.
That's wild.
Yeah. So then Planck got commissioned by an electric company to create a maximum light from light bulbs with minimum energy. The problem, think about that. He was commissioned by an electric company to create a maximum light from light bulbs with minimum energy. Well, that's the same problem we got today.
Mm-hmm.
The In November 1900, Planck, relying on Ludwig Edward Boltzmann, you know, the guy we were talking about, known for his work in statistical dynamics, worked on a conversion of energy and entropy, deriving the first version of the famous Planck black body radiation law. This didn't make light bulbs any more efficient. He never did shit with the light bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
But he laid down this theory of what they should do, you know?
Mm.
So now what impresses me, and this is what I use all the time, I'm choking here, is next discovery, which is, this is a cornerstone of physics today. Okay, and this is, see if you can grasp this one now. Okay. One of Planck's greatest contributions to modern science was the establishment of Planck length. Okay, the length. You know, in you have to have dimensions, especially when you get into calculus, because calculus likes to take things apart. It would take a curve and go into the curve and make it a straight line because it would microscope it down and look at microscopic increments of change. And that's how calculus works in nuclear physics. You follow me? In atomic models, because you just can't, you don't compute a curve of something, you know, and make a straight line to the accuracy that's required, for example, to put a spaceship in orbit. You follow me? So that's why, that's very important. So anyway, it was a Planck length. In the very beginning of the universe, the Big Bang, okay, remember the Big Bang, you heard of that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, this is what happened. Gravity, okay, occurred during the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Now considered to be a weaker force in comparison to magnetism, and was probably equal as strong as the other forces. Now, in nuclear physics, we talk about the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the bonding of atoms to make cells in your body. Okay, and the strong nuclear force is the binding energy. And when you break that, it creates an atomic bomb. In other words, you could take a piece of Kleenex. And if you break the strong nuclear force that holds those atoms together, you have a bomb. You follow me?
Yes.
So it happens that uranium can be broken down quicker than paper, you know, but they get the same energies out. Okay. So in the Big Bang, it was considered that gravity, you know, the Big Bang is weak nuclear, in physics, where the weak nuclear force, the strong nuclear force,
mm-hmm.
gravity and magnetism. That's the four forces that they've tried to unify in the unified field theory, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Strong
mm-hmm.
nuclear, weak nuclear, electromagnetic gravity. That's it. That's all of physics. That's all in that.
Amazing.
So, but in the very beginning, okay, of the Big Bang, gravity was considered to be equal with everything else. You follow me?
Yeah.
So he goes into that point at this scale, the universe is uninformed, possibly consisting of foaming bubbles or wormholes. So he's looking at how far did creation go? What's the smallest amount of movement from the bang itself, which would be smaller
mm-hmm.
than an atom, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the time it gets out to the farthest star, right?
Yes.
How? What's the first unit of measurement that could be possibly measured at the moment? In other words, let's have say it's 12 inches to the other end of the universe.
Right.
He wants to measure the small, he first break it down to 1 inch and break it into the smallest denominator of 1 inch. You follow me?
Yes.
That's what he did, using gravity, and it works in physics. It was theoretical then, but now it's proven. Okay? So, a Planck length, is expressed as 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, like 10 to the minus 33. At that size, lots of big bangs are just starting. Okay,
mm-hmm.
that's where lots of
mm-hmm.
big bangs start.
Mm-hmm.
And theoretically, the way Michio Kaku explained it on our show, and the way I see, you know, the way it's accepted in his, he's a theoretical physics, he's chair over at New York University.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's lots of big bangs. This is where the big bangs all start. But we're looking at one big bang that's our creation, where we
mm-hmm.
live.
Mm-hmm.
So Planck goes down to where just to where there's lots of potential for big bangs. And that's pretty damn small, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This, so he's saying 10 to the 33 minus 33. This would be 10 to the minus 20 times smaller than diameter of a proton. In effect, a size that is only this size, anything smaller in this size would be non-existent. It wouldn't exist.
Okay.
It's called Planck's constant. Okay. And that's used all over physics.
Okay.
Right? In order, now, how did this guy come up with this? Okay. Here's how. In order to come to the conclusion, here's some of the things he considered as fundamental constants of nature. This is how these guys think. Okay. General relativity is concerned with two constants of nature. G, the gravitational constant, which determines the strength of gravity, and C, the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum field theory, on the other hand, is concerned with speed of light and H, Planck's constant, which determines the amount of uncertainty in our knowledge. Physicists today are attempting to unite these theories into one of quantum gravity, which would be part of a unified field theory, which Einstein never finished. If this happens, we can expect all three constants, G, gravity, C, light, and H, Planck's constant, to play a role in the new theory. The gravity units, G units, are distance, 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 mass, time, time. The units of C, the units of H are mass slash time. Planck observed that there was only one way to combine these three constants to obtaining distance. Distance equals the square root of H, which is its constant, G, gravity, and three times the speed of light. Okay. The resulting distance is the Planck length. Now, having laid that puppy down, which is the cornerstone of physics, okay, when the Nazis seized power in 1933, Planck was 74. He witnessed many of his Jewish friends and colleagues expelled from their positions and humiliated, and hundreds of scientists emigrated from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to discuss these issues and losses with Hitler, but Hitler could not listen, so he knew Hitler. Because Planck was considered to be the most knowledgeable German physicist in Germany and has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in Physics in 1918 for his work in quantum, the Third Reich left him alone. Because he was so famous, they would have gone after Einstein, by the way. Reich left him alone.
Yeah.
It is said when if he had joined the Nazi party, this is a heavy one, if he had joined the Nazi party, his son Erwin would have not have been executed for his part in the plot to Hitler. He would not join the Nazi party. But he declined and Erwin was hanged. In 1944, his house in Berlin was completely destroyed by bombs from Allied raids.
Amazing.
Yeah. After Erwin died, Planck lost his love of life and died October 4th, 1947.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Looking back, you know, back on these years of these extremely talented scientists and the hard lives they lived, regardless of their financial statement, you know, status, it is truly amazing their accomplishments. I mean, think about these guys. Some of them, I mean, this guy went through hell. I mean, I've worked with musicians and you give them a little pressure and, oh, I can't create anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy was like he played the most beautiful, he played every kind of piano sonnet there was, you know, out of his head. He knew all of Beethoven's stuff, everybody's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In July 1449, the three Western powers approved replacement of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute with the Max Planck Institute. That's just one guy of many that I'm covering, but he is the guy that's responsible for us understanding that projector and that receptor that you're wearing right now.
Yeah.
There's more to come. So how'd you like that?
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. It's almost like the Big Bang was instantaneous.
Yeah, it was.
You know, it just, boom, it just went from one end of the universe instantaneously.
Yeah, it you know, we'll go more into it with Einstein's work and Niels Bohr and a couple other guys that worked on it. And then we'll finally get up to David Bohm, who died in 92. I wish I had known him when he was alive. David Bohm will be in the book, and he said he took all of this physics that we're looking at now, everything Einstein did, everything Planck did, and what he did is he said, this is a damn hologram. This is a hologram. This nothing exists.
Right.
That's why you can bump something over here and on the other side of the room it moves. That's how you get quantum entanglement.
Yes.
Laid it down.
Yes.
I mean, he laid it down good, but that was in the 90s, in the 80s that he did that.
It's amazing.
And then Richard Feynman, who became a great artist, with Maxwell, we didn't talk about Maxwell, and one of the other guys, Robert J. Oppenheimer and Edward Teller, came from that era, and they were students of these guys.
Right.
Which worked on the Manhattan Project. That's another thing I'm threading into this book. These guys, I mean, they were amazing, you know. So,
yeah.
So when Richard Feynman, when he came out with what's called quantum color chromodynamics, and I mentioned that, it's on my website, that's where we start looking at quarks and hadrons, you know, being part of bosons or leptons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we start looking at where color comes from. Where does color come from in light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you say somebody has white light around their aura, where does that come from? You follow me?
Right.
So that we're leading into that right now in this next chapter. The chapter after this one, we'll be getting into that. But see, last week we talked about some of the early guys, and this week we're talking about, you know, one of some of the newer guys. You see how science suddenly evolved?
Yes.
And when we get done with this part of the book, people will completely accept and understand what quantum is, how these receptors and projectors work, because they will have seen these people and their hardships and their kids and their families and all of that. I painted a picture of how human in the religion, all of it, you know, their churches and, you know, all the stuff these guys did. Some of them were bishops even, you know, in churches.
Yeah.
It's good to see the human thread of progress in science going back before the time of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing here. Then what we're going to do, and then the other chapter is what we're going to do, which we go into rocketry. And we jump through Hermann Oberth and Wernher von Braun, the guy I work with, because I was involved in that. And we go up into the U-2 and all the stuff, and then we get up to the point where we're talking about spy satellites.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How spy satellites evolved from spying on the Russians during the Cold War to spying on individuals in their homes, okay, and putting radiation on them, and that's called electronic harassment. Then what we do in another phase of the book is we talk about how Big Pharma, starting back in World War II with Merck and these companies, how they start, and the CIA with their 149 sub-projects, how they started putting their chemistry together, and how the chemistry, you know, the satellites beam down and the chemistry is put to you, you know, off these stupid ads and things, and they create all these phony diseases and sell you all these drugs.
Right.
So it ends up showing why people need quantum work to fight it off, because the whole thing is it's a giant, beautifully put together, now what I'm talking about, it's a great orchestration which the One World Order has put together with all of this. If I'm able to write about it and cover it in great, you know, detail from its antiquity to its innovation,
right,
on four different levels, you don't think that somebody else out there hasn't already done that? These are the guys that did it.
Yeah.
I'm the ones exposing it for what it is.
Yeah.
So this is a hell of a book now.
Sounds like a great book.
Huh?
Sounds like a great book.
Yeah, it's. I've been working on this thing every day, and I get all the interruptions and all the thorns in my side, and people, crap, you know, there's emergencies and put out fires all day long. But I got me a discipline now,
right?
Because I learned. I'll tell you what. While writing this book, I have learned with these guys their disciplines. And before, when I wrote my other book, I was too flighty. When I wrote that great big thick one you got now, The Rays of Truth, it was really flighty. You know, don't bother me. I don't give a shit. Now I just put everybody out of my, you know, my bird here, my sidekick and my other sidekick, her husband, who you haven't met yet, are on the air. And I mean, they're in the room here with me in the morning. The doors are shut. The house is so insulated; it's like a fortress. You can't hear outside. Nobody bothers me. Everybody knows you don't bother Dr. Fred. At 1 o'clock, come on in and Tell me the world, the planet's sinking. I don't care. But
yeah.
Until then, I don't want to hear from you. So it works. I finally found out how to write out here, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess we'll be seeing you next week.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's on February 14th, I think, something like that.
Yeah, you should see the big ad that's out in the stuff. So you got to be heading out here now. So you get to see the pad out here. Come on.
Yeah,
out to,
I can't wait. It'd be a lot of fun.
Jurassic Park, where
yeah.
we live.
I'll tell you, I've been doing a lot of work with the projector I have now.
Yeah.
And I'm finding out it's extremely powerful. It's a lot more powerful than any necklace I've ever worn in my life. And talk about quantum entanglements.
Oh, that's what these
things do. I used to be able to see a vortex, which was in my room that was about 3 feet wide.
Yeah,
and
I remember
since
that.
I've had this platinum projector, it's the whole ceiling.
Yeah, wow.
It takes in, it almost looks like you're looking through a gigantic microscope. You know, it's gigantic. It brings everything right up to your face. There's no getting away from it. It's
a couple people haven't written about it yet, but Annie Besant and Ledbetter, metaphysicians, right?
Yes.
They, at the turn of the century, were making clairvoyant observations on the atom. So when I remember 1913 is when Niels Bohr mapped out the atom and the quantum levels,
mm-hmm.
the electrons, meaning
mm-hmm.
there's two electrons in the first shell, there's eight in the next. And they did it by studying stable gases like helium and neon, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
And why these gases don't come apart very easy. Of course, if you break up, helium, then you end up with, you create hydrogen, you create an atomic or a hydrogen bomb. So, I mean, these are pretty stable elements because if you mess with them, you got a big bomb that'll blow up, half the planet. So when you start looking at how all this goes, it's very, very intense. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, it's extremely intense.
Yeah,
I know that. Between the silver projector, the gold projector, and the platinum projector, it's like looking through a telescope.
Yeah.
It's so powerful, it brings it right up to your face. I've never seen anything this powerful before in my life.
That's I lost my train of thought. I'm
sorry,
on that.
I didn't mean to do that too.
Yeah, yeah. Annie Besant and Charles Ledbetter, when they looked at the atom, they had what they called PSI, psi vision.
Okay.
And they were able to figure out, they didn't know, we hadn't named, it's the turn of the century now. They hadn't named, we knew we had J.J. Thomson done the electron, but they didn't know these tinier particles, quarks, hadrons. So they found a certain amount of an element in oxygen, a certain amount of element in hydrogen, and when they divided it, they came up with 16, which is the weight of oxygen, which is the atomic weight of oxygen. So they actually came up with their particles.
Yeah.
The atomic chart, which is within a half of 1% of the atomic weight today. And
yep.
So as a result of that, they were able to clairvoyantly view, into the atom these tiny particles that comprise the proton and so on and so on.
Yes.
Sometimes people call them the Babbitt atom even. Very interesting.
Yep.
So when you wear the projector, what you're describing is it's giving you that same kind of vision.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's yes.
giving you a micro-psi vision that Ledbetter and Annie Besant had. And by the way, in a lot of classic and quantum physics books, they are recognized as making a contribution.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it is accepted by the physics society.
Huh.
The order of physicists in the world, that these people were real.
Yeah.
The guy that's doing it now that's the new guy is Stephen Phillips out of England, but he's only repeating what they did and making the classic physics calculations to back up their work.
Right, right.
He wrote a book called The Extrasensory Perception of Quarks. If anybody wants to get that book, it's called The Extrasensory Perception of Quarks by Stephen Phillips. I recommend that you get it. And he's got two books that he's come out with since then.
Right.
So anyway.
That's interesting.
There you go. What a show, huh?
Yeah. That's great.
What else has been going on? How was your show last Saturday?
Last Saturday was pretty good. I was talking about the projector and using it, and I had a lot of phone calls. I had 4 or 5 phone calls, and it was quite interesting. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, if anybody wants to call in, I'm done with my dissertation for the evening. So if anybody has any questions on any of the stuff, go to bbsradio.com where you're at. Look at, I don't have the phone numbers right in front of me. Just give us a call. I have a trouble remembering names tonight.
That's okay. You're doing well. You're doing well.
That was Jane Mansfield's time. Who's that? There was that blonde, the guy that wore the top hat. You know what I mean?
By the stairs?
It's been a while. Field, W.C. Field.
Oh, W.C. Fields.
Yeah. He'd say, give me a call. A lot of movies. That actress that acted opposite him was so fabulous, too. I'm trying to remember her name, too, but give me a call.
Yeah.
Love W.C. Field movies.
He was funny.
He was, you know, he was a very smart man. And
yeah,
he didn't break anybody under the table, from what I'm understanding.
He was also from Philadelphia.
Down, you know. Give me a call.
Yeah. Come up and see me sometime, big boy.
Yeah, that was the girl. That was the girl.
I can't think of her name, but that's what she used to say.
You know, what's her name?
Dad,
you got to remember that. You're Jewish.
Yeah, she had so many facelifts. I think she was 80 when she passed away, or 85, and she looked like she was 45.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
God, she was very, very attractive.
Yeah.
I can't think of her name.
Yeah.
But he was great, W.C. Fields.
You know, my sidekick here, you know, Bella Bird here, it's on my shoulder right now. Well, her boyfriend, Buddy Bird, he was not, you know, he's not old enough to come to a show with us yet because he poops on me. And she doesn't ever poop on me. She will, when the show's over, she goes to a certain area that she poops in, and she poops and gets back on again. But see, these birds, the eclectus, the female eclectus, they live in trees down in the Solomon Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And they like to live up very high in a tree, and very high in the tree, maybe 100 feet off the ground or 70 feet off the ground, there'll be like a knot hole in it where there's like a natural cave in the tree.
Right.
And so they go in there, and they lay their eggs. Yeah, she gave me a big kiss. So they lay the eggs, and they'll stay in there for up to 10 months.
Wow.
The male goes out and brings the food in, and then he regurgitates the food into her, and after he chews it, and that's how they keep the babies, and she does it to the babies.
Amazing.
So Bella's about 2 and a half or so. And so in my studio here, where I'm at now, you really can't see. I'll have to get a camera where you can pan around here. But behind me is a bunch of big consoles where I do my Saturday show. I've recorded it. One console is like about 7 feet tall, full of instruments, you know, recording equipment.
Yeah.
So then there's a big space under, and then I got some giant speakers over there in the corner.
Yeah.
Well, she'll be over here. She has a perch over here on the other side of the room, and her and Buddy, her husband, who's only, you know, he's only, in May 2030, he'll be a year old. He's bigger than she is, but he's just a baby.
Uh-huh.
And so she's 3, and she wants to have kids now. This bird wants to make some babies.
Right, right. Well, he's a little young, isn't he?
Yeah, he's young to do anything, so she's frustrated. So what she does, she jumps off her perch, and she's just started, I've been working out here for 3 or 4 months,
uh-huh.
and the spring has come in now, and the days are longer, and in the last 2 weeks, she jumps off her perch. Instead of coming over here and climbing up on my shoulder, she runs underneath the big console over there, and like she wants to, you know, start making a nest.
Gotcha. Hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Bell. This is JoJo. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I was out in Arizona for a while. Now I'm back in California.
Speaking of Arizona, who's going to win the game on Sunday?
Oh, man, I was born a Steelers fan.
Oh, Steeler guy, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. But they keep the ground ball. That old Kurt, what's his name? He's got the ball in the air, you know? Kurt Warner. What do you think? You think it'll be a ground game or what?
I don't know. I'm just hoping for a good game, honestly.
I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be I didn't even watch much football this year, but I did watch the very end of the playoffs, and I was like, all right, we might have a good Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, we probably will.
Yeah. You guys Arizona fans?
Oh, yeah. I'm a USC fan.
Oh, okay.
And Pete Carroll and I are good friends, and I didn't get to see Pete. I was invited. I had to turn down some dinners and stuff that I was invited to this year because I've been working on this book. I haven't had much of a life, but last year I was out there at the practice, and oh my God, I just love to be with USC. And so actually, Matt Leinart's over there. I guess he's not playing much, but hopefully next year. But Kurt Warner is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a peak of where Brett Favre was, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he just keeps going.
Yeah.
Keeps getting to the big games.
So anyhow, what's happening? What you calling in about? You got something to ask us or what?
I'm specifically calling in
about on the phone with us.
About two things because I'm going to get a new receptor any day now.
What are you going to get?
Probably the sterling silver with maybe a gold bridge and the multivite.
Oh, dual tone. Yeah, those are nice. Those are sweet.
Got to go with the multivite.
I got some Moldavites for you. Because Sean Morton, you know, he got me on the Moldavite quest, and I got some. Have I got some Moldavites.
Nice.
I'm reaching up here to my drawer. I got some Moldavites.
Oh, you're okay. Because I have you on the screen right now.
I was just trying to pull one out here, you know.
And that's the question I had, Dr. Bell, with all the computer stuff and the cell phone stuff. As my sensitivities go up, it's like. This ELF stuff's going a little crazy.
Oh, the ELF stuff's out of control.
And with the receptor over my heart, I mean, is it something where I'd have to clean it a few times a day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go. Look at this. I mean, look at that puppy right there. He's waiting to go in the receptor. I just happen to have some precious stones in the drawer above me. So, yeah, you got to wash the receptor off every day. You might want to get the thing gold-plated, unless you're going for the image of the silver and the gold. I'd have a gold plate put on it because then it won't tarnish.
Okay.
Yeah, we got some killer Moldavites here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them.
Yeah.
That's a powerful stone.
I'm just wondering, though, what can I do to deflect my giant computer screen that I have to work on hours a day and my cell phone? Because I know the receptor will help.
But right. What the receptor does is it negates. I sold a bunch of those to Xerox, you know, for the repair people over there.
Okay.
Hang on a second. There's a piece of Moldavite. I'll pull this out. We can see it. Steve, when are you going to get your computer up and running?
Oh, this doggone thing. I tried to get it going tonight. I can't get it going.
Man,
I was trying to get you on the screen.
Apple?
Yeah, I got an Apple.
Yeah, see, those are too weird. Okay, you want to see a piece of Moldavite? I can cut this puppy for you. It won't be cheap, but let me see if I can get this up there. Hang on, up to the camera. Let me get a light on it. See if I got a light here. Boy, you got to see this Moldavite. This is a killer piece. Oh, here we go. I'm gonna light the Moldavite. Trying to here. Look, see the green on it? See it?
Yeah.
How do you like that? I can cut that down and put it, you know, the real Moldavite with the real power, it's got that clear green. See, I can see right through it?
Yep.
That dark, crappy black stuff, I don't like it. Look at that. Is that awesome or what? See it glowing? Yeah, can you see it okay? Yeah, that turning it now. That's Moldavite. That's the stuff. This is like the honey of it, you know? Like I say, I got some Moldavite. We can cut this into a gem. It'll be a little bit more expensive, but if you're going to spend that much money anyway, you want this piece of Moldavite. So when you order it, just say, hey, I want the piece Dr. Fred showed me on the video, you know? So go ahead and ask me your question now.
Are you there, Dr. Fred?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I got cut off and had to call back in case.
Okay, but you saw the piece, right?
Oh, yeah, I saw those pieces.
That is a real expensive piece, but you know what? I can cut two stones out of that. We just cut some stones. I have a gem cutter. I like to buy it raw. I just cut a piece of tanzanite down. It was about that size, down to 1 carat.
Wow.
But man, that thing's got the energy. Oh. Yeah.
Still here.
Okay. Go ahead.
And with the tanzanite, what are the properties of tanzanite? Because I've gotten little tiny shards of it, but I've heard it's pretty darn expensive.
Oh, it used to be like nothing. It's gone through the roof. Psychic amplifier.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Moldavite is an extraterrestrial amplifier. It works on the, well, they both work on the parasympathetic system. But I think, you know, people that do, if you do any kind of channeling and you don't want to make sure it's the government not, you know, doing their thing, which I'm covering in my book, how people are programmed to channel to revelation, you really want to have the Moldavite.
Okay.
That's a powerful stone.
And is there anything to put around a computer monitor? Because a friend of mine told me to put some plants around it to suck away the ELF. But is there anything besides wearing a receptor?
We got to go, guys.
You got to go?
Yeah. You want to get some of our nuclear discs. I can't believe we lost track of time. It's 6:58. Wow. All right. We got to go, guys. This was a good show, though.
Yes, it was.
When you start losing track of time, you know you got a good show going.
Yeah.
So give us a call. Talk to Steve tomorrow. And you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. And we're getting kicked off the air. We had too much fun tonight. Steve, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, buddy.
Joe, thanks for calling in, man. Bye.